this is Kendra Brodine, founder and CEO of WomenLawyersOnline.com. And today I am so pleased to bring you a conversation with Donna Ballman. Donna has worked for two law firms before founding her own employment law practice, Donna M. Ballman, PA, where she's practiced since 1990. She focused her writing on nonfiction for a number of years, publishing numerous articles on issues such as discrimination, sexual harassment, and employment law. Donna's book, The Writer's Guide to the Courtroom, Let's Quill All the Lawyers, has been released this year by Baylor Publications as part of their award-winning Get It Right series. I love these plays on words. She blogs about using the law in stories at The Right Report, and she teaches writers how to help their characters navigate the civil justice system at writers' conferences. She also podcasts about writing and publishing news and other issues for writers in the Litopia podcast twice a week. She's currently working on a couple of young adult novels as well. Over the years, her cases have been anything but dull. The then mayor of Miami once accused her of trying to turn the Jose Marti Park into Martin Luther King Park after she forced them to elect their commission members using districts so they would have black representation. She once sued a mobster for sexual harassment. Donna represented Bill Clinton as his Florida general counsel for his first presidential campaign. When he was sued personally, she defended him, although she says the case lasted about 10 minutes. During the campaign, she got to spend a day riding around with Hillary Clinton. She introduced Hillary to Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, who were both because they were both Wellesley alums, and was present when Hillary met Janet Reno. Her husband and she spent two nights at the White House when Marjorie Stoneman Douglas received the Medal of Freedom. Having the attitude that when you have a minute with the most powerful man in the world, you ought to ask him for something, Donna convinced then-President Clinton to free the children that were in Guantanamo when it was being used as an immigration holding facility after Lisbeth Martinez, the little girl with the violin, brought the issue to the public eye. Donna knew the president was releasing them when she got a letter telling her so. He apparently hadn't told the State Department yet, so they were a bit surprised. She has been named one of the Law Dragon 500 Leading Plaintiffs Lawyers in America in 2007, was named in 2000 as a member of the Leading Florida Attorneys voted on by members of the Florida Bar. She's been named a top South Florida attorney in 2002, 2003, 2005, 2007, 8, 9, and 10 by South Florida Legal Guide and is listed in Who's Who in American Law. Her husband and she were named one of Fort Lauderdale's finest couples by the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation for their work in the community. Ms. Ballman has been featured on Sky Radio Network on the Forbes America's Most Influential Women program, Lifetime Television Network's 1996 special Full Disclosure, Sexual Harassment, and Bulgarian TV co-ops program Women in America, Atlanta, Miami. She's been interviewed about her cases and as an expert on legal issues by numerous media, ranging from radio and television news to newspapers, including the Wall Street Journal. She has taught numerous seminars for legal and community organizations and has served on the editorial advisory board for James Publishing, a legal publishing company. Donna named her two daughters after powerful women, Madeline, who is 11, after Madeleine Albright, and Amelia, who is 8, named after Amelia Earhart. She lives in Fort Lauderdale in horse country with her husband, Ben, their Shih Tzu, Frankie, and a cat, Dino. And she vows never to be a dull mom. And I don't know how you could, Donna, with that background, but I welcome you to the call today.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
Oh, so good to have you. I love reading about all of your adventures in both practice and personally, I'm sure. But what a story. What a story there. That's great. Well, I would love to just jump in. I know we'll be able to use the questions as sort of a foundation for our conversation and go off a bit from there. And maybe at some point there'll be a moment to, I don't know, tell about those experiences with President Clinton and Hillary and all of that. What a fun story, my goodness.
That was a lot of fun. It was a good time.
Oh, I can only imagine. So, well, let's start with the questions, and maybe we'll end up talking about some of those things as well. I'm wondering, Donna, looking back at your personal and your professional history in your life and your legal practice, do you feel like you were always pretty good at balancing your work and your life, your professional and your personal and professional responsibilities, or do you feel like there was a moment in time or a pivotal point where you made a decision to do that in a different way?
You know, I would say there were a few turning points in my career. It's been a long time. I think 24 years now, my goodness. That's kind of scary. I think the first major turning point was when I decided to open my own practice. And that was as much a choice about work-life balance as it was about just having the independence. And that was probably triggered. There were a lot of let's say issues in that firm at the time, like slamming door partners meetings and things like that. And they actually called me in at one point to do a review. And this was, you know, when we're sort of thinking about whether I was on a partnership track or not, you know, a couple of years into the practice. And they said to me that everything was great, but that I was too aggressive. And I'm thinking, you know, did they say that to the male litigators? Because I was doing commercial litigation at the time. And I just thought, you know, that's just not right. And that got me thinking. And so that was, I think, kind of one of the triggers to get me to open my own practice. And then I was the only woman in the litigation department that they had. And so when I opened my own firm, I always intended to do commercial litigation. But because I had handled some of the employment law issues for the firm when I went out on my own, they ended up referring me their employment law stuff. So that's how I ended up doing employment law. And I found that having my own practice was probably the first step in that balance. But then when you open your own practice, of course, it's very tempting to make that 24/7. And so I think that probably the next big decision was, you know, you get so stressed, especially down here. Attorneys can be very, very aggressive, and I came up as a lawyer in the 80s, back when we were taught to be very aggressive and, you know, just, you know, take no prisoners kind of attitude. And it was a very stressful time, and I found myself, I was literally sitting at a train crossing, and I was, you know, stressed, and I could just feel my heart rate increasing, and I was so upset at having to wait for this train, and just something hit me. I said, you know, why is everything being so personal? And I realized at that moment that none of it was that important. It wasn't worth having a heart attack over. None of it was that. And so I just made a conscious decision at that point to really change my personality and my attitude toward my law practice. And I think that was the next big step. And then, of course, you know, having kids was the next big step, which was another direction towards having to rebalance everything.
Well, so it sounds like you had a few pivotal points, and even, like you said, just sitting there waiting, you said it was for the train, you know, having the self-awareness of your own reaction, both physically and emotionally, what was going on, and using that as a pivotal point to make some changes, because that was a feeling I'd assume you didn't want to be feeling for the rest of your life.
Well, exactly. You know, I was raised, you know, it was an all-male litigation department that I came up in, and we were taught to be very aggressive, take no prisoners. So essentially you're taught to be really mean to opposing counsel and stuff like that. And at that moment I just said, you know what, I'm not going to do that anymore. That's not my personality. That's not how I want to live my life. And so they're just letting go of that and making a conscious decision to not give as much as I got, that no matter how nasty somebody got to me, I was not going to give in turn, and to just be courteous and professional, and to not let the stress of the business life and the law life get to me as much. It really made a difference.
Oh, it sounds like it. And then, of course, like you said, of course kids always make you readjust everything that you thought you knew as well.
Well, you know, it's true. I think that was a big change, because at the time, of course, I was very much a go-getter. I was a member of a zillion organizations. I was very involved in politics, which, of course, makes you no money at all. But it's a lot of fun, and, you know, you get a lot of great contacts and make a lot of good friends. Heck, I met my husband in politics. But at that point, when I had kids, I dropped every single organization I was a member of. I just made a decision. I'm not going to any more evening meetings. I'm not going to lunch meetings. I'm going to go into work. I'm going to do my work. I'm going to leave and go home and be with my family. And I think that was the right decision.
Right. And you had reasons to rebalance, reprioritize, and make those decisions. And, wow, good for you. And good for you for just articulating in such a lovely way. Thank you for articulating those pivotal points that you experienced along the way.
I'm glad, and you know, maybe somebody else will be helped along the way.
Well, and it's so interesting. Like I said, of course, you know, of course having children makes that change, and I think it does for all of us in some important way. But from those sort of strong, dark lines in the sand to just fine lines in the sand of sitting there and having the self-awareness to say, I don't like how I'm feeling, and I refuse to feel this way for the rest of my professional career. It gives others the freedom to be open to their own feelings, be sensitive to their own feelings, and it doesn't need to be something as finite as, you know, I'm just trying to, as the birth of a child, say, or as something big in one's life. It can be something small. It can be a moment of sitting at a train station and making a decision. So I thank you for articulating both sides of that spectrum.
Well, I'm a big believer in if you don't like something about your life or yourself, change it.
Mm-hmm.
Or quit complaining about it.
Right, exactly. You don't have any right to complain if you're not willing to change it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Good. Well, thank you. And I'm wondering then, sort of to move on to the next question, what do you consider to be along that path, along your journey, both personally, professionally, in life, in law, what has been your biggest challenge as you've tried to create personal and professional balance, integration, creating that ideal mesh, if you can, or at least trying to get to that place between your personal and professional lives?
You know, and that I'm afraid I'm, you know, your typical chick, because I'd have to say the number one thing is self-doubt. And women are so bad. We beat ourselves up. We always have self-doubt. You see these, you used to see these cocky young lawyers going in the men, and they were out of law school one day, and they're in court, and they're the biggest things. And the women don't have that attitude and never do. And after 24 years, I have to say, I still have a lot of self-doubt. And every day, I have to just convince myself that I know what I'm doing and that, you know, that I am the professional that I am. And I think all women, no matter what level of career we're at, all have that nagging doubt that we're frauds, we're phonies, and that somebody's going to find us out.
I think you've hit the nail on the head, and I know I feel the same way, and so many women, and we're so afraid of being found out that I think many of us feel that way and don't even articulate the fear of that because we're afraid of being found out that we're afraid of being found out.
and yet
so many women, and I love how you said you're a typical chick, that in itself makes it feel even better that there's so many of us out there who are doubting ourselves, that doubt our professionalism, doubt our skills, doubt our ability to do things. And it is. It does seem to be a feminine problem, like you said.
Yeah, and we're afraid to even show it,
exactly.
Especially when we work around men.
Right.
Because men don't have that, or at least if they have it, I think they do have it too, but
yes.
I think they don't show it. And they certainly have the ability to overcome it with bravado and sometimes just being loud. And we tend not to do that. And so I think that we're afraid to admit it. But, you know, I think probably years ago, I was at a Florida Association for Women Lawyers meeting where somebody mentioned that, and I said, wow, that's me. Mm-hmm. And it was a woman who was a very seasoned attorney, and I realized that if she could say it out loud, I could too, and we all have that.
Oh, see, it's even as you said it out loud, I just sort of breathed a sigh of relief. I thought, okay, good, that's right, I'm not the only one who feels that way, because we sometimes when we hear it from other women, we realize and remember that we're not alone feeling that. And as you were saying also about the men, I remember hearing somewhere that for a man sometimes to put himself out as an expert or as that voice of authority, he feels like he only needs to know, say, 50-60% of what's going on, and he'll put himself out there as as the authority on something or with confidence. But for a woman, we feel like we sometimes need to know 100% of everything and before we'll step out and act like the expert, which, of course, we never really reach 100%, so we're so tentative to be that authority and to put ourselves out. And it's just interesting the way the male versus the female mind works, I think, in terms of just confidence and really even false confidence, but getting out there and saying it and doing it.
Well, how many years have I been teaching CLEs? I teach CLEs on employment law all the time. And I just taught one on Take Your Child to Work Day. And my 8-year-old got to hear me teach a seminar on sexual, racial, and other types of harassment and then disability discrimination. And I'm thinking, okay, well, number one, what's wrong with this picture teaching a seminar on sexual harassment in front of your 8-year-old? So I had to kind of adjust my presentation, but I was really scared going into that CLE thinking, I'm going to make a jerk of myself in front of my 8-year-old if somebody asks me a question I don't know the answer to or whatever, because I still have that thing where I feel like I have to know everything about every case because how dare I teach if I don't know everything? And it's ridiculous. You can't know everything. Right. That's what we're taught in law school, is to how to look stuff up. We don't know everything. Yep. And so even though I know that that's a ridiculous fear, and I watch my colleagues teach, and some of them don't know the answers to questions, and it doesn't seem to bother them at all. And, you know, no shame there. I'll look it up and tell you later. Mm-hmm. But women have this horrible, gripping fear that if they don't know the answer, that something's going to happen.
Right. Again, thank you just for articulating it and saying it. And we'll probably still have it, but at least we'll know that we're not unique in having that it's a very natural. And just knowing that it's natural, I think, or knowing that other women feel the same way, I think allows us to walk through it with a bit more courage. Even though we still feel the same way, we know that it's not just us. It's a natural thing that's coming up. And that fear of looking like a fraud or looking like an imposter, it becomes a little less intimidating when you realize that many, 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 and like you said, even well-seasoned, well-accomplished women like yourself feel the same way when they get up in front of a group or when they're doing something.
It's true, and it's true in all professions. It happens in writing too. Women have a different attitude about even when women winning big awards and things like that have different attitudes than the men.
Mhm. Mhm. Well, it's nice to voice them and be honest about them, so we realize those differences, because sometimes we don't know them, and then we just wonder, is it just me, or is there something different going on? So thank you for sharing it. What then, Donna, would you say, on sort of the flip side, as opposed to your biggest challenge, what's been your biggest lesson, your biggest learning along your journey personally, professionally? What would you say has been your biggest lesson?
I think the most important lesson is that none of the work stuff matters at all, and that it's the family and the personal life that's important. I think a lot of us get caught up, and especially people who are in big law. I saw so many of my law school classmates go to big law firms, and some of them had nervous breakdowns, and they were working these crazy hours, and it became this macho thing of who could work more hours and who spent the night in the law firm, and they're making so much money, they didn't take vacations. And I think, well, wait a minute, what's the point of making all that money if you're not having any fun? Because isn't the point of making money to do fun things in your life and to make your life and your family's life better? So if you put it all in perspective and say, what am I doing? I'm here to make a living. And that's really what it is. It's a profession, and the only thing we're here to do as lawyers is we're here to make a living, to try to maybe make the world a better place in the process. But it's all about, we got to take home that paycheck. And if you realize that it's just a job like any other and that none of it is as important as our families, that's a perspective that I think changes things. And it certainly changed my perspective when I had kids, because then it really comes into play what is the most important thing. And I make a point, I put on my calendar, so if the kids have a day off at school, I actually mark that off on my calendar and I take the day off with them, because there's a lot of like these teacher work days and things like that.
Right.
If the kids have something that's going on in school that I can participate in, I mark it off on my calendar, and I hold that date, and I fight for those dates. Unless it's something that can't be moved, like a trial, I will fight for those dates. And it's important. It's way more important. And when my staff ask me for time off, you know, can I go to the Mother's Day thing at my kid's school? Of course you can. Mm-hmm. That's more important. And it's also something that you have to project to opposing counsel, too. If somebody has a tragedy or a personal issue, you've got to put that in perspective and realize that none of what you're engaged in that case is as important as letting that person deal with their personal issue. I actually had a male colleague come to me one time. It was a case that had been bitter, to say the least. He was, let's say, a strong personality. And we had scheduled a week of depositions and had to go to court multiple times to get everything scheduled. Everything was disputed. And he was one of those personalities brought up, when I was brought up, that everything had to be nasty and ugly. And he called me up that Monday morning, and he was clearly in tears. And he said, look, I'm sorry, but my dad's just had a stroke. And would you mind terribly if we took off the depositions for today, and I'll just go up to be with my mom, and then I'll make arrangements, and I'll be back? And I said, you know what? No. I said, not only do I not mind, but let's take the whole week's depositions off. Mm-hmm. You go deal with what you need to deal with, because your family's more important. You know, I said, do you need me to call anybody to help reschedule this stuff or whatever? And he was shocked. He didn't know what to expect, because he expected me to be moving for sanctions.
Oh.
I didn't want to live my life that way.
Mm-mm.
And you know what? He was never able to be mean to me again either. So
right.
he kind of stepped back from that aggression. And so the fact that he had been, you know, really very aggressive to me, and the fact that I chose to step back and not take the same attitude, I think made a big difference, and I try to always live my life that way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's, I you probably gave him a gift in that situation where I wouldn't know, but I mean, just for him, for the perspective of how to treat an opposing counsel. I mean, and you provided such a role model of that and a model of what that can look like. And I mean, we can only hope that in the future he had a different mindset of how to be, how to show up as an opposing counsel on either side, how to treat someone not only in an emergency but just in general. And I think it's wonderful that you provided
him. I hope maybe he paid that forward a little bit.
Yeah.
I doubt it.
No, we can hold out hope, can't we?
You can hope.
Oh, well. But, I mean, I think it is something to be said for when we treat others, be they opposing counsel or really anywhere we show up in our lives, with that kind of respect and encouraging them to live out what we know are really their priorities, too, even if they're not able to fully embrace them and live them out. We're giving them a gift and paying it forward, like you said, and allowing them to live something that's important to them. And who knows? I mean, there's always that ripple effect of when you fully step into your integrity and your values and live that way and others see it, you never know where that will reach. Maybe their children, maybe their colleagues, maybe opposing counsel down the line. But it gives us a chance to do something that we'll never know what comes from it, but it does do something good for the people around us and the people that they touch.
And even if nothing comes out of it anywhere else, what it does is it lets you sleep at night.
That's right.
And you know that you are living the life that you choose to live, and you're not living something the way that other people have taught you to live.
Exactly, exactly. You can look yourself in the mirror and know that you did the right thing that you feel good about. And when you tell your children or look at your children, you know that you did something that, you know, they can be proud of, too. So, oh, wonderful. Well, along with that big lesson, are there maybe a couple tips or tools or strategies that you've used or found to be useful to you in your life, in your career, in you know, your personal way of being that could be useful to others as they try to find that balance between work and life?
Well, to the extent you can, go home. We tend to work so late. And listen, I have a laptop. I take my computer home, and sometimes I respond to emails at 2 a.m. So people think that's a little intense, but I actually have my cell phone set to send me an alarm. And part of it's that I have to pick the kids up from school. My husband and I each pick up one of them, so two different schools. And so part of it's that, but part of it is also just a choice that at a certain time I am going to go home and be with my family. So, and even if I have to do some work from home, it really makes a difference. So I think that's important to go home if you can. Obviously, if you're with Big Law and they want you to be there until 8, then maybe it's time to look for another job. But that's mm-hmm. just my jaded viewpoint about Big Law, but if you can, go home. The other thing is just have times that you won't work. This thing about you have to work 24/7, again, largely Big Law that you have to work 7 days a week, whatever. Even if you're in that intense of an atmosphere, have maybe one day that you don't work, Sunday, for instance, or Saturday. That's a day when I am simply not going to work, and have time. So if you have a vacation, take it. If you have a day that's important to you to take off, or you just need a sanity break and you need to take a vacation day, do it and take those times because you need to refresh. And then the other thing about a sanity break is I learned this late, probably a year ago, but I just don't take calls in the afternoons. We simply don't answer the firm phone. My office manager leaves at noon, and we just don't answer the phone. It picks up on voicemail, and we all get a lot more work done. It's amazing if you're not constantly answering the phone, people calling in. Or I tell people, email me. If you need to reach me, I'm sitting here looking at my email because I'm always in front of the computer. But that stress of having to answer the phone and take phone calls, and it interrupts your thought process. It interrupts your flow. If you can take control of that for just a few hours a day, it makes a difference.
That's a great idea. And setting those boundaries around knowing what works for you and what doesn't work, and it maybe doesn't work to be interrupted constantly in the afternoon. So giving yourself permission to put those boundaries around and just having a voicemail message that says, you know, your call will not be answered in the afternoon if it's an emergency or whatever you want to say. But using systems to create boundaries to protect your own productivity and your own sanity, I think that's great advice. Well, Donna, is there anything else? I really appreciate all of your insights, the lessons you've learned, the challenges that you've shared, just the idea of self-care when you share about going home and having the times that you just won't work and setting up those boundaries as well around your own time and space and energy. Those are invaluable lessons that folks can learn a lot from. Is there anything else you'd want to share or add before we wrap up?
I would just say to women lawyers in general is be good to each other. Women are really hard on other women, and I think we need to cut it out.
That's true. That's right. That's right. Because like we said, there's so many things I think we're going through at the same time and many times the same ways. Many of us are moms. You know, we're struggling with some of the same issues, and if we just beat each other up, it doesn't make anybody's life any better. So that's a great tip to remember that we're kind of in it together, and we can learn a lot and share a lot, and who knows, maybe even make a few friends along the way. But oh, it's just been delightful talking with you, Donna. I really appreciate your time and your insights, your humor, your advice, and I've been very grateful to you. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure.
All right. Well, until next time, this is Kendra Brodin signing off for this interview, and I wish you real success always and in always. Thank you so much for being with us today, and we'll see you again next time. Bye-bye.